For February the 23rd, 2024, we talk about Helldivers 2, the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth demo, and much more. Welcome to Level 491. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Moxie.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back. Thanks for understanding the little week off there. I've got an announcement at the start here. Gary and I are going to be back at the Midwest Gaming Classic this year.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Huzzah!
Where and when is that?
That is in Milwaukee. The first weekend of April. Let me look at the actual dates. Let's see here. Should be enough time. Yes, it is April the 6th and 7th. We have a time. We're going to be doing a live show at noon on Saturday, topic to be determined. And we're going to be tabling there all weekend. Additionally, there will be a meetup like there was last year. Hopefully we're not going to get my car stolen again.
Oh yeah.
We'll see. My new car doesn't have that exploit, and also I have a steering wheel lock now, so it will be as unattractive of a joyride prospect as I can make it. Looking forward to seeing you if you're coming out. Sorry about that background noise. The cats are chasing each other. Moxie, you had a trip. You weren't You weren't here the last time you recorded.
Yeah, I just got back from New Orleans for Mardi Gras.
Nice. How was that?
Woo-hoo.
It was a lot of fun.
Mm.
It is really difficult for me to express how truly crazy huge it is.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I was there for about a week. And, 5 days, something like that.
Yeah, that's a better portion of a week.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, every day there were in the neighborhood of, like, 4 parades.
But...
Many of the parades would have, like, 20-plus floats. Not all of them, but many of them. And there's been parades going on, like, at least on the weekends for, like, weeks before that, like, since, like, mid-January.
Okay.
Oh, sure.
Massive amounts of parades, and then at the parades, you know, every float is just throwing out tons of beads and light-up doohickeys and, tiny footballs and just all sorts of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
One of the dumb highlights is, one of the parades we were on, I guess we were kind of near the end. So by the point it got to us, the parade had kind of gotten stretched out some. And so there were often, pretty big, laws between the floats.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Like actually a few minutes. and so... like after every float, it was like all of the kids would just like rush into the street and like continue their games of like catch and tag and stuff like that.
And roll by like
halfway through, everyone had like 3 like mini footballs. So there's just like mini footballs being thrown like back and forth across the street and stuff.
And just left and right. Parade, game on. Yeah.
Yep. and then one of the other highlights was I went there with my cousin, and he's a big football fan, so was watching the Super Bowl. I was just kind of off exploring the city, and I come upon this huge group of people. It turns out there's, in addition to the official parades, by which I mean parades actually have permits, there are secret parades that are unscheduled. And so this was a parade by the Crew de Eris.
Discordians. Eris. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, goddess or whatever of chaos. It was basically a bunch of, like, I don't know what you'd call it, like, art, hippie, crust punk people.
Yeah.
That all arranged to, like, have this massive parade. The theme was water.
Okay.
And so like, most of the parades will have some sort of theme. But yeah, the theme was water. And so, you know, a lot of people dressed up with, like, like gals with big, huge, like, jellyfish hats and stuff like that. But, like, you know, it could be as weird as, like, there's one dude there that had a hat made of, like, the 5-gallon jug from, like, an office water cooler.
Right.
And so just, you know, marched all through French Quarter and then just ended up by the river, you know, just kind of hanging out. It was a lot of fun. I have determined something I've learned about my life is that if I ever find myself in a like H.P. Lovecraft style story, I'm definitely getting, like, I don't know, corrupted or possessed or whatever, because apparently when I find, you know, a random ritual to a goddess of chaos, I'm just like, yeah, I'll join that. Likewise, there was a vendor there selling some things, and I bought a pin for my jacket, except every other thing she was selling was some sort of, like, prank item.
Like a joy buzzer, like, for doing?
Yeah, joy buzzers and, like, you know, cans of nuts that are actually, like, spring snakes and stuff like that. So I'm slightly worried that, like, you know, the other shoe is going to drop at some point. But yeah, no, I mean, whole thing was an amazing time. We ended up on Mardi Gras. So, you know, the last, you know, night before Ash Wednesday, which is kind of the, you know, the biggest night. There's, you know, just massive amount of people on Bourbon Street, and the prime spots are, you know, being up on the balconies in one of the buildings, you know, lining it. But those are pretty hard to get to. However, we actually, one of the vampire bars, we got a invite to a speakeasy.
Okay.
And that, you know, had to go in and, you know, give the you know, nondescript person inside a password, and, you know, ended up, you know, they actually had a balcony, so got up on the balcony, which was a lot of fun.
Sweet.
So yeah, it was really fun. The funny thing, or what, one of the surprising things is, despite its reputation, you know, pretty much everyone was pretty cool. I only saw, and I guess this sounds like a lot, I only saw, you know, maybe 5 or 6 people that were just completely, like, you know, like, falling over drunk, that sort of thing. Which, when you consider that, like, the entire city is drinking for a week, you know, is pretty significant. And, like, I didn't see a single person, like, you know, be drunk and harassing someone or, like, destroying property or anything like that.
If you don't know who in your friend group that is, it's you.
I mean, maybe I was the drunk one.
It's nice that they're only being self-destructive, not outwardly destructive.
Yes, exactly, exactly. I did have someone try to sell me acid for the stated purpose of making enough money to buy a Percocet. So that was not good.
That's just one step on the way between, you know, having a paperclip and having a house.
Yeah.
So that was, I'm like, you do you, man. But yeah, no, it was actually really good time. You know, lot of fun. Actually met someone from Mansfield there, which was
that's wild.
I mean, you can type it in the chat, but I want to know who.
not someone any of us know.
Gotcha.
One of the two people you don't know? That's a small world.
Yeah.
Okay, so it wasn't like, oh hey, it's you. It's just like literally you just talk to somebody like, oh, where are you from? Oh, you wouldn't know.
I guess
you have a shirt on that's like, I'm from Mansfield. You wouldn't get it. It's a Mansfield thing.
Oh yeah. No, it was when we were up on the balcony the last night, there was a just a crazy like industrial kind of goth band all dressed up vampire style.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got talking to them, and yeah, their drummer was from Mansfield, which was interesting.
Mm. Yeah, small world.
Yeah.
Nice.
So
well.
Yeah, that's me. I'm still kind of recovering, but you know, mostly back on my feet.
That's good. Good to hear. Glad you had fun. I also had a trip, but it wasn't anything super super special. But it was out of character just to go and do something like that at the last minute. My brother and his daughter, my niece, they've got like a yearly tradition. They they go up to Detroit, and there are a bunch of these like restaurants that they found when they were going up and going to museums up there, you know. So it's like these, you know, ritual spots that they really like that they try to hit every year. And I tagged along with them, went up for an overnight with that, and it was a good time. So enjoyed myself, had ate at a really good restaurant that like mostly just sells ham. It's like they've got they've got ham and eggs, and they have a ham sandwich, and then a couple of kinds of soup, and that's it.
Could you have gotten a three ham omelet?
Oh, three hams would kill me for sure.
Was the soup hot ham water?
No, the soup was not hot ham water. They had a bean soup and they had a pea soup.
Okay.
Yeah. Had some pierogies at a good like little Polish place. Yeah, no. So that was a good time. And then today I got face lasers.
Hell yeah.
Wait, what? I mean, what?
Offensive face laser? Face lasers?
No.
Lasers?
They're pointed to me. I have rosacea. Went to a dermatologist, said like, hey, I'm kind of self-conscious about this facial redness or whatever. And they said, yeah, here's some creams. It's not going to take care of everything, but there's these lasers. They've got lasers for that. So I drove down to Delaware, Ohio today and had something incredibly painful done to my entire face.
Not zero chance you become dark man.
Yes. Yeah. There might be, I don't know. There was a waiver. It was pretty long. I didn't do a control F on the dark man process with that. But it was really weird. Like they cover your eyes and they slather you with jelly. And then they've got like a little stylus that hurts a lot when they move it, and then cover every little bit of your face with that. It like it zaps the blood vessels, like the inflamed blood vessels that are there from the rosacea or whatever, with the idea being destroy those. They'll be kind of like reincorporated and your face won't be as red.
I would be so panicked that I was getting a face tattoo.
This sounds
like a face tattoo.
They should keep these doors apart.
Maybe there's a place that can do it.
Sounds a lot like hair removal.
Yes.
Like for people that don't want to have beards.
Yeah. For my understanding, not as painful as electrolysis. It hurt, and it's gonna, like, my face is gonna be swollen. They said you'll be lucky if you can open your eyes tomorrow.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, yeah.
I just hope that was, like, the thing he entered with before starting. It's like, you'll be lucky if you can open your eyes tomorrow.
say goodbye to the visible spectrum. Yeah. So that's been my whole thing. Right now it just feels like I have a very bad sunburn, but
to be fair, you did not explicitly say you did not get a face tattoo, correct?
I mean, the doors were very close to each other. Yeah,
it's a dragon, isn't it? It's always a dragon.
Yeah, always a dragon. Dennis, how about you?
Man, I'm doing good. Coming off a long weekend where I did absolutely nothing and it was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I did some out of character, streaming and, I did some streaming on Twitch.
Wait, are you just trying to do video games in the pre-roll? Are you learning from Ben?
Yeah. Be cool. But anyway, so the Slay by Comment, thing that I do, we got a straight up busted deck from the very first floor. Basically there's a relic that swaps all of your basic cards for random cards. Pandora's box, Ben might recognize.
Pandora's box
actually sounds pretty good.
It basically took away all of our basic cards, which you want out of your deck anyway, and gave us like a handcrafted, perfectly formed deck for the end game. And it's like, oh, well, we've got nothing left to do. Like, this is exactly like, if you could choose what cards you had in your deck, you would want these.
Hmm.
And like maybe one or two others. And then on the next two floors, we got those one or two others. So it's just like, okay. So they're like, okay, can we please, instead of spending, you know, 200 days on this, can we please have you just play through it and start the run again?
Right.
And I acquiesced just cause it was so broken good that even I couldn't screw it up.
No.
And so yesterday and today I streamed myself playing the run, and people were commenting live in the chat instead of on Reddit overnight.
So did you screw it up or?
Oh, I tried my hardest, but I did not manage to screw it up. Go ahead.
So can you give me like, I don't know, like which character are you playing as, or like, was this a challenge mode? Like I only know the most, you know, tangential Slay the Spiring.
Yeah, so this was playing on the highest Ascension, the highest difficulty. It was playing with the Watcher, which is kind of widely considered the most broken class. Like, you know, it is probably easier to beat the game with the Watcher once you've learned it than any other character in the base game.
Highest complexity, probably.
Very high complexity, but also very consistently you can get a winning deck. You know, it's all about, basically they have different stances, and you know, one of them, Wrath stance, you deal double damage, but everyone does double damage to you. And then the other stance is Calm, doesn't do anything, but when you leave Calm stance, you get extra energy. And then you can take a bunch of cards that allow you, like, good things happen when you change stances. And then it's all about just like changing stances a million times in a turn to generate energy, do extra damage, draw cards, etc.
I think I'm in Wrath stance right now.
Yes. That's if you're paying attention, you're in Wrath stance, that's for sure.
No, just at this you broke categorization here. So
I did. But it's a streaming thing, it's not a gaming thing. I could have been doing anything, I would still tell this story.
No.
The fun part was, so for the first day, I sequestered myself away, you know, kind of blocked some time for it. And then when I realized I wasn't going to go long, I, the second time I streamed and Barrett was like playing in the basement where I was streaming. So at first I was like, oh, I'll have him watch a show while I do this. And then he very quickly decided that what I was doing was more interesting than what he was doing.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, yeah, talking to him, he's asking, who are you talking to? Can I go to their house? I'm hungry. I have to go potty. So we literally had a potty break. In the middle of the stream, played catch with him. He made everyone pizza. So it was just very wholesome, very fun. And still resulted in a win, despite me playing completely suboptimally and making a bunch of meme picks throughout.
Hmm. I mean, so were you were you playing it just based on your own decisions, or were you outsourcing that to chat as well in the spirit of the experiment?
In the spirit of the experiment, I started trying to defer to what chat would say to do pretty quickly. What I learned is I've got a hard ceiling of like debating what to do and doing math before I just start playing cards.
Oh,
it's like a compulsive reflex. It's like, okay, this turn, I think we have lethal, but we need to factor in how often we can get into wrath stance. So let me just count. And then, you know, 2 minutes later, it's like, it's YOLO.
Too much. Yeah.
Yeah.
Too much.
From what I've seen, like most of the streamers I've seen, it seems like the optimal is being good enough at the game that you can kind of just intuit, you know, like what you should be doing.
Right. Yeah. It feels right. Even if your conscious mind hasn't done the exact math.
Right.
Which can also be a recipe for disaster if you're not careful.
Well, that's the other side. It's not fun watching someone stream if they don't mess up in hilarious ways sometimes. Right. Yeah.
Have I got a stream for you? But anyway, yeah. I mean, it was a solid 40 people that were watching day one. Neat. And then probably a solid 20 on day two. Lots of fun. I'll probably stream again. And I'm streaming at Green Laser 73 now. I changed it from Deck of Wonders just because I'm doing more video game stuff on it. So, yeah.
Nice.
Cool.
And Ben, round us out.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I can take Dennis's typical role and talk about board games but in the pre-roll and put Cole even further in wrath mode. I had a pretty chill weekend. I played Werewolf with some friends over the weekend.
Like the White Wolf?
It's like One Night Werewolf, but more than one night. It's like Mafia.
Yeah, social deduction. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I thought you meant like the counterpart to Vampire the Masquerade.
Oh, gotcha. There's one game I wanted to share the story of. I was playing with my partner, and the second round I drew the werewolf roll, and usually don't like that because usually I'm more stressed out when I have to like lie in front of people. And so when they go to tell you to wake up and see who the other werewolf is, it's my partner sitting on the couch as the other werewolf. And so, needless to say, two rounds into the game, I threw my partner under the bus, got them voted out because they made like an obvious blunder, but had a nice comeback feeling where we ended up winning because I gained somebody's trust and picked somebody to be a patsy more or less and turn suspicion on them. And so I got a feeling that I hadn't felt since the Among Us days of Duckstream. So
now did your partner agree when at the end you're like, hey, we won, babe?
I think so. There was not that much blowback. I think they would admit that they did not make a great move in claiming a role that somebody else had claimed. So, yeah.
Fair.
It's very interesting to me that you felt very uncomfortable lying, but when it came time to betray somebody close to you, you did it with basically no hesitation.
In the game, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, betrayals in game. Yeah, that's fine.
Oh my
gosh. I have
gosh.
Boundaries.
Moxie, you were going to see, you were saying something, sorry.
Oh no, I cannot play these games. I don't understand. Sorry, this is probably my neurodivergent thing. I don't understand lying in general. I don't understand fake lying.
Right.
So like my answer to all of it is like, vote for me or don't. You have literally no evidence to go on. any choice you make is no different than random chance.
Yeah.
And like nihilist it turns approach. Out that's not a compelling way to play the game.
it pierces the fiction a little bit.
Or apparently to some people it looks suspicious. I don't know. Mm. It's
I think the way that works is like you have to genuinely believe that you're innocent or something and just try and act like that while you're playing, even if you know you're the werewolf or imposter or whatever. But
I mean, explain.
You just pretend. Be like, yeah, I'm like the innocent person or whatever. Oh, I'm gonna click this kill button. Don't worry about it. That's just a bug or something. I'm still an innocent person. Like, do that. And again,
this is a fascinating glimpse into Ben's mind.
Only do it in the game, though. You only do it in the game.
I like playing these games because I see it as like an improv exercise more than anything. Mm-hmm. It's just like, okay, each of us is playing our role. And I need to come up with an argument on the spot that is believable and deliver it in a believable way. You know, everybody is a scene partner for it. When I conceptualize it like that, I can have a very good time.
You do have advantage on performance checks, I feel like, Cole.
How?
That sounded kind of werewolfy. I think he's the werewolf.
I don't know. Maybe I've got a skill for it. I've got no idea. Oh, we've done.
Also, I've learned apparently the answer to "Are you the werewolf?" should not be "No, but I would like to be."
No, but it seems really fun.
Yeah.
No, but I hope they kill you.
Oh, that's been a hefty banter section. I think we ought to talk about some video games.
All right.
Okay. I mean, more so than the ones we already talked about. That's
why it was hefty.
To do that, we need to talk, you know, do the regular kind of show with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
The Grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Moxie, you have been away the longest, so I will go to you first.
Okay, so I actually have to start by, with being away and, like, you know, time having ceased for a week. Did you guys talk about Helldivers last week?
No, we were not on last week.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay. Excellent. Yeah. Helldivers 2 has dropped, I guess would be the thematically appropriate way to say it.
Like server connections or?
Well, that too. And
gags about dropping, gags about bugs. We got them for days.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm actually going to get into that. That's actually one of my favorite parts of the experience. But this game is amazing.
So quick show of hands, who here has played this? I have.
My hand is up.
Okay. All right.
I have seen my friends play it.
Gotcha. Okay. Just wanted to make it clear who all is participating here. Yeah, I haven't played very much, but just know that we're tag teaming on this. Go ahead and lay out the premise.
Yeah. So I would kind of characterize the gameplay as sort of being almost like a mashup of Left 4 Dead and like Call of Duty Warzone, in that like Warzone, you're basically parachuting into a hostile combat area and have to complete various objectives and then extract. However, like Left 4 Dead, it is overtly a PvE game. Although what makes the gameplay interesting is, when I say PvE game, that does not mean that you will not be killing the other players, because this is very much a friendly fire is enabled.
Yeah,
it's like in baseball, the umpires are considered part of the environment.
Okay.
So PvE does include other players.
Right.
I mean, this is made by the same people that made Magicka.
Mm-hmm. That's these people. Okay, I didn't know that.
So friendly fire is a feature.
Yes.
Is it also made by the same people who made Helldivers?
Yes.
Okay. I would hope so.
It and looks very different.
It's a different. Oh yeah. It's a different genre entirely. Wasn't Helldivers like a top down like twin stick shooter kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The other big big primary component to this is that the game world is pretty overtly a homage to Starship Troopers, the the movie, not the book.
Right. It is the parody of hyper-fascism. Like, you are the forces of Super Earth spreading managed democracy with freedom, which is always used as a euphemism for shooting something with a gun.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the endearing things here is everything that can support that does. You know, all of your call-outs and voice chatter support that. So, like, you know, one of the ones that's become kind of, I don't know, famous or whatever in the community is often when you chuck a grenade, your character will yell, "Here, have a taste of some liberty."
That's okay. That's really bad.
Oh yeah, it's yes. all horrible. Yeah.
The goofiness is very intentional. Yes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But one of the things is, I mean, just an extreme attention to detail. For example, you know, every player gets their own you know, battleship, you know, spaceship that is kind of their you know, it's the lobby, but also kind of the home base.
Yeah. What's the name of your
Well, and that's what I was going to say. One of the things that they have added is the ability to name these. However, the way you name them is they're always the something of something, and all of the somethings are things that are very much in support of this kind of, you know, fascist, maybe democracy. So you can be like, you know, the Senator of Wrath.
Yeah.
Or
my ship is the Superintendent of Individual Merits.
So I'm currently something just super generic, just because I wanted to get to the game, like, I don't know, Wing of Twilight. The ones I was thinking of going to for, though, just for whatever, was I think you can be like the Unity of Individual Merit, or the also like you can be like the Gun of Peace.
That's pretty good. I saw Claw was an option, and one of the rules for Slay the Spire is if you see Claw, you take Claw.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm the Claw of Destiny.
One of the other things that I haven't seen before but is apparently a thing is apparently if you're on your ship and get disconnected from the network, all of the lights go out in your ship.
So there's so much cool stuff. Like, if you look out the window, I believe, at least originally, the stuff that you're seeing happen outside your window is all procced by other people's games.
Right.
And so you'll see hell pods launch. You'll see orbital lasers fire down. You'll see ships move. I've even seen one video of a ship getting destroyed, which I assume has to be like a mission failure or something.
Right.
And that's really cool. I've noticed, though, and I'm sure we'll get to this part, over the past couple days with them trying to fix the servers, that outside window marquee has gone very, very still.
Yeah. Anything they can do to reduce the, you know, to reduce the queue times, I think is going to be good for them. Although it doesn't seem to stopping people from buying it.
So
my goodness,
quick, before we get to that, one other gameplay thing I wanted to highlight is that and we've kind of touched on this with you talk about the lasers and stuff, you know, one of the big, I think you could say, innovations is the primary thing you unlock, other than just some, you know, basic weapons, is what they call stratagems, which are basically things you can call down from your ship, like orbital bombardment, airstrikes, you know, all those sorts of things.
I love everything about this. The fact that you dial them up with basically like Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat combos.
Yes,
by inputting buttons. you know, like, and it rewards you for memorizing them, but there's also like the stress of being surrounded by a bunch of bugs or robots, and then oh no, it's not working. What's happening here?
Yeah, what I mess up?
Yeah, and you know, everything up to and including the fact that you deploy them by throwing a Pokeball, basically.
Yep.
Yeah,
it's a futuristic, cool sci-fi flair. How dare you?
They also, I mean, can just dramatically turn the tide of battle. In particular, and again, this is keeping with kind of the tone of the game, you know, what you were saying, Cole, about, like, liberty always means kill thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, almost all of the mission objectives, where you're supposed to, like, go in and, like, fight things and, you know, throw a grenade, you know, through a port to destroy, you know, the important building, you can also just call down, like, an orbital bombardment.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, and mm-hmm. there are only so many of them that you that you have right, that you can do. Exactly. And there's a cooldown on them as well. Something that good.
Oh, I was going to say, and all of them are very, very friendly fire enabled.
Yes. Oh, yes.
One of the things I found in my most recent game is you can call down turrets, and turrets will shoot directly through you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice. No. If we end up playing together, I'm going to kill one of y'all with a supply drop. It's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
totally. I will be
funny story about that. One of the main mission types right now is rescuing civilians.
Oh.
So you go to an outpost. You push a button to open their door, and then, you know, three civilians will run towards the bunker that they're supposed to be in for evacuation.
Mm-hmm.
And so me being like, hey, it's kind of hairy out here, I'm going to make sure they've got some cover fire. I call down a turret, hit the button.
Uh-oh.
And the first civilian runs directly under it as it comes down and crushes them in a spray of blood. The turret then proceeds to turn and mow down the other two like it was targeting them. So, yeah, mind your crossfires.
Yeah. I mean, like the basic play even of this, just in your hands, you know, when you're on the surface, it's a third person shooter, right? Mm-hmm. And you're pretty pulled back, so you have really good like situational awareness, but like they've got just the right amount of like ragdolling and characters diving around to feel super chaotic, but also like super cinematic sometimes too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the mission space, you're on this, you know, you're in this biome, you know, probably some kind of like proc gen, or it's, you know, one of a number that it can randomize from, but like it's not just your objectives that you're there for, it's points of interest on the way to, it's choosing where to drop in relation to the objectives and the extraction point, like all of these little decisions that can be argued about with the people you are playing with.
Yes.
You know, it's all a bunch of stuff that makes, that kind of lines up for what should be making, you know, it makes perfect sense as a like really, really popular viral game because of those little elements.
Mm-hmm. That's right, baby. Helldivers 2 is an extraction shooter.
I've got no idea what an extraction shooter is. Nobody has been able to define it for me.
That's one of my favorite parts of the game, both because it's kind of works from a gameplay standpoint, but especially works from a tone standpoint, is like you do get bonus XP and money for extracting. However, as long as you complete the mission, anyone surviving actually isn't that important.
Well, it's hilarious. Yes. Because like you can die while you're waiting for the extraction ship to land, and ridiculously, if you have lives left, they will shoot somebody down just to land to be extracted again while the extraction is there.
You could be literally killed by the extraction vehicle.
Uh-huh.
Like if you stand under one of its jets, that will roast you. And then, yeah, they'll fire you down. Fun tip, if you die that way and the vehicle, the pelican, they call it, is on the ground, you can put your shell directly into the pelican and it will push you up through the floor into safety.
Huh.
So, yeah, a little quirk there.
Huh.
So,
I feel like we'd be remiss if we didn't say that the biomes in this game are absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Cole, you described it as cinematic, but just... Oh my God. There's a couple moments where it's like, I just need to stop and spend my requisite 2.3 seconds admiring the scenery here.
Yeah. Yeah. just amazing lighting and just like atmospherics, on mm-hmm. it, you know? I only ever, the two missions I fucked around with were all, both on a planet that was, like the superheated desert biome or whatever, finding mm-hmm. bugs there.
It's fucking Dune.
It kinda, yeah. And it was just ridiculously pretty.
Well, and that one in particular just nails the Starship Troopers look.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know. If you haven't played against the bots, the automatons yet, you are doing yourself a disfavor. A bot mission in the jungle at night is terrifying and gorgeous in like a predator Vietnam kind of movie way.
Hmm.
Like it feels straight out of one of those crazy action movies.
Thanks.
So the other side of this that's been honestly in some ways kind of funny is just the ludicrous server issues they're having.
Yeah, when I fired it up, so I fired it up yesterday during the day, probably around like 2, 3 p.m., something like that. I only had to wait like, it felt like 10 minutes. Like I left it open in a window and I just went and read my sites. And then I went, read the sites, made myself a sandwich. And when I came back, I was ready to do the tutorial. So it wasn't terrible. Nice. What's the longest people here have waited?
Oh, Monday night I was on for I think an hour and a half, probably longer because I played a half hour of something. Yeah, no, I didn't even get in. An hour and a half before I called it.
Oof.
Yeah. And it's one of those things I didn't want to like back out and go back in, but it genuinely felt like it's like okay, I'm stuck somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know if they've changed it, but my understanding is it doesn't appear that there's actually a login queue. It's just you periodically try to log in and either get in or don't.
No.
Oh.
Which, everything I've seen, it seems like they did not at all, expect this to be, nearly this popular.
No. Yeah.
I think I saw, this might be someone just using hyperbole, but that their peak, concurrent users on Helldiver 1 was 7,000. And Steam is at like 700,000. So yeah, two orders of magnitude up from what they would expect.
The only thing I've seen with relation to this is they tweeted out that it wasn't just like a server issue of like needing more hardware, that it was like they needed to change things in the game to make it work with that level of traffic.
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
Yeah, I mean, this from my get... oh, go ahead.
Oh, go on.
Well, I was gonna say from my days in consulting. We'd always tell people like everyone wants to plan for if things go worse than expected, but nobody ever plans for if things go way better than expected.
Yeah.
There was always a portion of our clients that were calling us in a panic because like they absolutely crushed it and they don't know where to go next. So
nice little dingus you got there. You thought about scaling it?
Yeah.
and that's why when I worked in marketing, the majority of the things that we made videos for were for scaling shit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So this does get into what's actually maybe my favorite part of all this, which is that the community is actually pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if any of you guys have gone to the Reddit, but the posts I'm doing air quotes like complaining about the servers are almost all actually pretty entertaining memes.
Okay.
Anything from like people have started to equate the two enemies in the games are the the androids and the bugs. So equating that to the bugs are the bugs obviously and the androids are the servers.
Oh, okay.
People posting, you know, screenshots from Starship Troopers with, you know, all I want is to do my part. everything just
keeping it in the spirit of it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Likewise, there's tons of posts with people in good fun, just posting videos of like, you know, teams of experienced players, and then like one pickup person that's level one that ends up like calling in an airstrike and wiping out the entire thing.
Yeah, I mean,
just being like, I fucking love democracy.
I'm doing my part.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's, there's a lot to be said for, I don't know. I can't say this with certainty, but it feels like the fact that it is co-op PvE is helping keep a little bit of the toxic out.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'd agree with that.
And the developer, responded. I saw this, you know, people were asking like, hey, you know, it's a fun game here. You should probably add PvP. And it's like, yeah, we're not interested in that. Like, I hear Tarkov's good. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. That being their official response has been neat.
And yeah, in general, yeah, like the communication has been so amazing. So, I'm in the Discord, I'm on Reddit, and just in general, you know, they have updates every day. Anytime anything happens, they've even given updates that are just like, hey, we're still hard at work.
Yeah.
It's taken a long time, but just wanted to pop in and say that we are still hard at work.
Yeah.
And like that's all I want from these teams is that kind of clarity.
Mm-hmm.
So kudos, like, you know, it sucks that they're having to not just buy more servers, but, you know, redo entire portions of the game to make this work. And, you know, obviously you wish that hadn't happened because you want to play the game because you don't want them burning themselves out.
Yeah.
When they should be celebrating their great success. But also they're doing a really good job handling this. So,
yeah. Yeah.
So it seems like they probably should have done early access, but
it was basically a surprise launch. You know, they had that
kinda,
they had, it was like it was I never heard about it before. I never saw any like headlines about it anyway, and they're just like, hey, here's Helldivers 2. It's a different kind of game. Also, it's coming out in 6 days, so enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah it really came suddenly.
Yeah,
there's been a lot of fun also comparison between this and like some of the 40K games.
Okay.
Because, you know, both a lot of similar in terms of, you know, if you look at like Dark Tide, you know, co-op shooters, parodies of fascism, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, I was talking with some people on Discord. It's interesting to me the degree to which this being, on the surface, a much more optimistic game in its like propaganda. It's interesting how that allows it to parody completely different like parts of fascism than like what 40K is able to.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like most of these people aren't the big scary, you know, ugly bad guys. They're just patsies.
Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly.
Very patriotic patsies.
Well, and you're also not seeing you're out at the edge.
You're also not seeing.
You're also like, you don't spend any time in the Imperial Corps, so you don't see what. I don't know. I wouldn't give this the civilization a lot of credit until we see, you know.
Right.
I don't mean that. I mean more though, like 40K does a really good job of, you know, kind of skewering the like hyper macho and like fundamentalist parts of fascism.
Mm-hmm.
But by its nature, it can't really do any of the like patriotism, you know, like, oh yeah, we're the greatest, because like it's all about like everything sucks and you should be happy for that.
Yeah. It's got Fallout-esque vibes.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, the best line is there's a person in your thing who's like, man, I love my job serving democracy here. It's great that the government even leases me the tools I need to do my job.
Right. One of my other favorite chatters is when you complete the missions, one of the messages you can get is, that was one for the record books. where all missions are recorded for future reference.
Oh, the other one, when you come back from a mission, the existence of low casualty, or excuse me, the existence of high casualty missions implies the existence of low casualty missions. And we can all take solace in that.
Yeah. It's a
so freaking yeah. good.
It's a,
you just stand here quoting it all night.
It's a pretty well put together game if you put aside the fact that people can't really play it right now. Which that is a bummer, right? Because if I said, hey, do we want to get a 3-person game going or something like that? I'm free at 7 p.m. this night. Well, okay, it's not just a die roll whether or not I get in the first 30 minutes or whatever. It is 4 die rolls.
Yeah,
or 3 die rolls, or however many people are playing. Right.
I do feel like it's a interesting commentary on like the cynicism you often see from the the AAA game community of like, hey, it turns out if you do a really good job and like make a great game that's not afraid to be political, people are actually willing to like overlook a ton of problems.
Yeah.
You know, like, maybe you shouldn't just make cynical, safe AAA games.
Mm-hmm.
But
I mean, we're seeing that with Larian. We're seeing that with, what's the other big indie one that came out recently? Baldur's Gate certainly was that way.
Yeah.
Not beholden to just corporate interests.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Not trying to back off of stuff. Go ahead.
I feel like it happens like every year. It's like a single player. Well, in this case, it's a multiplayer game, but usually it's like a single player strong narrative game comes out. It's like, yes, more of this, please.
Yeah, please. Yep. Well, that's the, it's hard. Like every game we've mentioned is a feat in and of itself, but also,
Yeah, I think it was, with there being like one each year, I think it was, Moon from the Slack who said, a classic is whatever game the industry will learn all the wrong lessons from or something.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a very good way to put it. Yeah. But, I mean, do we have any final thoughts on Helldivers? I mean, I did 2 missions. I just did them by myself. It balanced pretty well for them. I died a few times, but, made some daring, dramatic escapes and felt pretty good about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
my first experience was dropping in with friends. Like I joined the game of friends that I saw playing. And they were experienced enough to know what we were doing, where they were going and kind of how everything worked.
Mm-hmm.
And the disorientation I felt of like, I don't know what anything is. I don't know where anything is. I don't know what we're doing here. I'm just trying to keep these guys in sight and not get lost in this forest full of, flesh-eating bugs was so just tonally spot on. I was like, this is a very unique experience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We find that our greatest advantage is, surprise. Well, surprise. Drop you. Oh, God. Nice. You played anything else besides Helldivers 2?
So I have one other that is not a I played, but just a really fun anecdote I wanted to share.
Okay.
Filed under the like, I hope to someday enjoy something as much as these people did. there's a local like Dungeons and Dragons themed coffee shop. So, get your coffee and then there's tons of people playing various, board games, card games, D&D campaigns, all that sort of thing. And while I was there getting a coffee, there were two dudes playing, whatever the Disney Magic the Gathering is.
Lorcana? Like,
yes, that is it. But doing the sound effects for their cards, the pew pews and stuff like that as they're playing. It's like, dude, I hope to someday be as excited about something as they are. So that's the sum total of that thing. But
play Lorcana like nobody's watching.
Yep.
Nice. I only have one that I want to talk about here. I went back on something I said last time, and I did play the demo for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Okay.
That's good. It's a good demo. It's the portion that is out right now. There's going to be another one. I don't know if I'm going to do that one. But the portion that is out right now, for people who know the story of Final Fantasy VII, it is the flashback of Cloud telling the story of basically Sephiroth's origin, like how he, went crazy and became the bad guy kind of deal. This mission that was 5 years in the past in Cloud's hometown of Nibelheim. It's a famous scene. If you know the greater story of Final Fantasy VII, you know that what you are seeing is not the way that it actually happens. And it's fun to see the way that they play with that. It's difficult to react to it from a story perspective because it is so contained. But the play is actually really cool. I was worried a little bit about how they were going to adapt to these bigger, wider open spaces after a remake, being mostly in these hallways, kind of confined to the alleys and facilities of Midgar. Here, you are going up this big mountain, you're going around in this big village of Nibelheim. Poking around looking for pickups and stuff. It's still very much a guided kind of experience, but there is, just a ton more scenery to look out and navigate, as you try to find your way around, even with people grousing about the yellow paint or whatever. There is yellow paint here. Get over it. It is less frustrating than being lost. Please and thank you. the big thing though here is the combat, which feels like a good upgrade on the combat from the from remake. The big thing that they are adding, kind of in addition to what was already there, real time with these active skills or what have you, is kind of a reliance on something that was a little bit kind of hacked together in the first one, which are these synergy attacks. If two characters have an active time kind of resource, point to use, you can dial in particular kind of like dual attacks. Think like the X attacks or the twin attacks or triple attacks in Chrono Trigger. Where you can, freeze the game, and then dial in your selection and then do those. And they even have it like dual limit breaks that you can do as well, in particular Ooh. Situations, so that is interesting. And it is cool to play around with it. It's also fun that the fact that you get to play as Sephiroth in this one and plays entirely differently than Cloud, whereas Cloud can like shift into a stance where he is less mobile and cannot dodge, but does a ton of attacks very quickly. Sephiroth doesn't have like a mode shift. He has like finishers that you can dial in after particular combos that go, so it like kind of takes you into this more like streak heavy and aggressive style of combat, as opposed to like negotiating being a little bit more mobile versus being more damage output heavy. So like it's not like I was worried about how the combat and stuff was going to go. But I was pleasantly surprised at how well it kind of came together, and the presentational stuff is on point. I'm pretty excited about this one coming out.
Very cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
This demo is separate than the game that's coming out, or is it like a part of that game? Or
yeah, it's one of the first things that'll happen in the main game as it goes. I think I get a bonus or something. I get a little collectible doodad for having done played the demo or whatever. But yeah, it's a flashback that takes place in the story to kind of set up some reveals that'll happen way later in the story, which does draw attention to the fact that we don't know how far Rebirth is going to go. Mm-hmm. In the overall story of Final Fantasy VII, or if it's going to diverge in a huge and heavy way. and I have kept myself, aside from the demo, pretty unspoiled about things that they have announced. So
is there an explicit target for how many games they want to make while they're remaking Final Fantasy VII?
I thought it was seven. Three. I thought it was
seven.
I thought it was three. If they do four, that is ridiculous, because that will definitely take them basically a decade to have re-released this entire game telling this story.
Ooh, yeah.
And also at the rate that they are going, since Remake was a PS4 game and Rebirth is a mid-cycle PS5 game, it may be possible that this remake, quote unquote, spans three generations of consoles.
They're targeting the PS7.
Yeah, it's fucking dumb.
So Cask, a super cynical question: is the story of Final Fantasy VII actually good enough to justify all of this?
Oh, I'm too close. You know, it's hard for me to say. You know, objectively about that, I think that it is a good story, especially as it relates to kind of identity. You know, with kind of the things that's going on with Cloud. It's a story that I'm kind of excited to see another take on, especially as they're iterating and making something that is aware that it is kind of a retelling, you know. It's with all the caveats of it being a goofy melodramatic story, etc. And you know, having, you know, Nomura and the, you know, that sensibility kind of foregrounded, you know, that's probably a lot of buy-in, maybe too much buy-in for some people, but like with all those caveats, I would say, like, yeah, it's enough to have me excited about it. Yeah. Cool. But that's about it. The only other thing I've been playing is some Yakuza 0, but I've not played enough of that to have too much of an opinion.
I've only played 13 hours, so I'm not really on the tutorial yet.
Yeah.
I've played like 6 hours or something like that. But I want to get more like side shit under my belt as I go, because otherwise the thing I would have to say is these random encounters are a little bit of a bummer, but man, this is a really fun crime drama, which is what Yakuza games are to me, you know. Mm-hmm. So
see, I feel like 90% of what I hear about Yakuza has nothing to do with the storyline and everything to do with like racing go-karts and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's got something for everybody. I don't know, the only one of these that I have played all the way through is the original Yakuza for the PS2, and like, oh, this is just an incredibly good crime drama. Like just the story, even if there is nothing else, this would be kind of engaging to work through. The fact that you have this bonkers side story stuff that kind of builds out this district in Tokyo, all of that is also great. You know, so I'm not somebody who just like skips the main story. I find joy in that as well. Yeah, that's all. Nice. I've got. Dennis, since you also had Helldiver stuff, I'll throw it to you as well.
No, I have Helldivers. I have the Slay the Spire that I played for my dumb series that I do, and that's it.
Oh, that's it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, you've already talked about those.
I know, right?
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
Speaking about things we've already talked about, I only have two small things, so it's been nothing new, unfortunately.
Okay.
I've continued to play Resident Evil VR. It's gotten a little bit scarier because you have a bunch of like bug head things coming at you and are lower on resources in places. But there is a trick to not getting freaked out in VR, which is just stare at your feet and then you can kind of pretend nothing's happening and that your head's not getting nibbled on right there. So that's all good. But yeah, interesting choices in VR compared to the regular game, specifically in the section where there's like a bell being rung that's exploding people's heads one at a time. You drop your gun in VR when that happens, which is...
Oh, really?
Adds to the panic, yeah.
Wait, so do you have to like bend down and pick it up, or is it...
You have to re-wait for it to appear in your belt and then just pick it up from there.
Okay.
But that's an added complication that is sad, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, so it's the red red robed cultists,
yeah.
Yep. With their little lantern thing.
Yeah.
So you're well into the castle at this point.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good way to handle stunning you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, like, it would take me out of it if bell rings and then it goes into like the third person, you know, animation of Leon doing the Italian Spider-Man, whoa, yeah, kind of thing. Yeah, I was dropping it feels really stressful.
Yeah, I was happy with how I handled the one part where you're in like the black water room or whatever. That's like kind of early on in the castle.
Yeah, famous sniper cover for Ashley.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. I was happy with how I handled that with a rifle with a scope on it. That felt nice being able to look down the sight and like zoom in and shoot people. So I think that was like really well integrated,
mm-hmm.
control wise. But yeah, I died, I think, 2 times in a row at the room I was talking about with the bell. And so that was like enough for me to kind of rage quit, and I haven't stepped back into it yet. So mm-hmm. I'll probably go back when the time is right.
You'll be back.
Yeah. But the other thing that I've jumped into, which is another game I've already played, is I started a new Baldur's Gate campaign.
Nice.
Playing as a
honor mode,
I'm thinking about turning down to easy mode because I'm like, man, I don't want to have to like die and restart this combat thing. Like, I just want to like speed through and become powerful.
In honor mode, you don't die and restart.
Oh wait, what's that? Oh, sorry. Since Dennis suggested it, I assumed it was like you die and then your game gets wiped or whatever.
Yeah,
exactly. So you don't restart.
Oh, all right. Yes, all right. My assumptions were correct. No.
Yeah, that seems like focusing on the part of the game that people don't care about, by which I mean the part when no one's fucking.
Please, there's a little show called Real Lich Hours where we talk about all of the fantastic tactical combat and branching story stuff.
I thought you were going to say where we talk about all the characters fucking.
All the fucking, just going into each other nonstop.
I will say I am somewhat envious. I play on console for Baldur's Gate, but I am very envious. I saw a streamer playing Baldur's Gate on PC, and they had like a bunch of mods installed where it like, for example, tells you every time there's a cutscene that you should go back to camp to see, mm-hmm. or it tells you like people's reactions to what you say. So it's like they'll +5 like you or -5 like you if you say this.
Oh, instead of just approve and disapprove.
Yeah.
That's good.
So. Yeah, I'm thinking about maybe just getting it on PC and playing it there, just because that looks really nice. But anyway, I'm playing as Bard, liking it so far. Jack of all trades is great if you want to just be able to do a bunch of skill checks and get it passed. I'm a stone dwarf, I think, or stone gnome. Stone gnome, maybe.
Okay. So weed is legal in Faerun?
Got it.
Sorry. It wasn't a good joke, but it was a joke.
I think the reason I picked them is they have a, like advantage on history checks, and I'm just trying to like do that sort of thing where it's like be able to be really, really competent in dialogue and just try and explore like all the options of the game that way. And so just trying to abuse that. Most of the like spells I unlock as that character is just like adding to that. So like being able to speak with animals, speak to the dead, knock, those types of things. Things that like unlock more content as opposed to being combat tricks.
Yeah.
I've been enjoying that. That's kind of taken the place, and that's been my go-to. Like if I want to relax for a couple hours and play a game, I've been playing that. So
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Super cool.
And nice. As I said, I think I'm gonna turn it down to easy because like literally the least fun that I have in the game is like when I have to reload or like I start, you know, like I notice that I haven't saved. I'm in the middle of a combat, so then I have to get sweaty and like try and like win or else or like use all my items and make sure I win. So I don't have to like replay stuff. I don't know. Feels bad or I feel.
God forbid you use one of those 500 acid vials you're hanging on to.
I've been using, I used my spider egg last night. I know. Anyway, that game's great. That's always a joy to play. And basically I want to try a bunch of the things that I didn't try the first run, the more like critical decisions. So like kind of like who you take help from. I am going to kind of switch those around, except for the goblins. Anyway.
I'm disappointed. My second run, what I was planning on doing is an evil run where I have Will, Minthara, and I forget who else in my party. But the idea is that I would basically side with Will's patron. mm-hmm. and bully him the entire time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and just see where that went. But apparently there is no way, without doing some really elaborate, like, character juggling, feels like exploit kind of stuff, to side with the goblins to get Minthara and also have Will in your party.
Yeah. Oh. Interesting. Yeah.
Can, that actually raises a question. How do they handle your patron if you play as a warlock?
I have not played it as a warlock.
No clue.
I was thinking of double classing as a warlock with this run, but
no,
we'll see.
I mean, I know warlocks are notoriously one of the best classes to multi-class.
Yeah, you just get those, class, right?
Yeah, get those cantrips.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all I got.
Cool.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, AI is so hot right now, and everyone thinks of Midjourney and ChatGPT when they say that. But for my coming of age, AI meant the behavior of NPCs in video games. So I want to hear about that kind of AI. And basically what AI was most impressive or surprising to you with its level of, you know, artificial intelligence.
Yeah. We've got Peter here who says, so this one time back at band camp, we were playing Rock Band. Oh, wait, wrong story. I don't know how that follows. actually, the first time I was genuinely impressed by the AI in a video game was watching one of the demo screens in Soul Calibur 3, because those used to be a thing. I believe it was Ivy and Killick were squaring off, and I saw a bunch of moves that I never knew either character was capable of. For a good while, I could only want to try and play better. Then I realized I'm never going to be as good as a computer-controlled character. Was still pretty neat to watch, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Soul Calibur's computer-controlled characters kicked my butt pretty much all the time.
Oh, yeah, straight out of the arena most times.
Yes.
And Soul Calibur 3, yes. That had, like, fighter designing, too, so, like, you could tweak their behavior. I'm not sure to what granularity.
Oh, interesting.
The only one of those that I've really spent any time with was Soul Calibur 1 on the Dreamcast. Yep. Let's hear, Moxie, what's Callum say?
Callum says, the security forces in Half-Life using grenades to get you out of cover and using flanking tactics.
That was pretty impressive at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Super cool.
And Ben, what does Rookie say?
Rookie says, the first time I played Halo and an enemy dived away from my grenade, my enemy didn't get blown, but my mind did.
Mm. Yeah. Also pretty good. And those two kind of relate to my answer. Sorry if this takes yours, Moxie. But the first Fear game.
Yes.
Yeah. The single player in that really felt like you had super smart enemies that were able to effectively control a space. And kind of did the Half-Life Marines tactics just on overdrive with it. In reality, what they were doing was they had very simple AI. They just knew how to design these levels to always give them something to do these little tricks, which is why it was so many office, specifically like office spaces that you were shooting up. but it was really effective. You know, not an especially scary game, but you know, it kind of felt like, oh, this is a game that is getting harder on an axis that isn't just I die faster and the enemies die slower, right?
One of the things that I particularly remember is that the enemies could like topple over shelves in order to make cover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they would kick over tables and stuff too. And that was like early on. It was kind of alongside like Source Engine stuff, but it was still really impressive that different materials had different penetration as well.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And it seemed like they had a pretty good understanding of that as well. Again, it was all in office spaces, so it was mostly cubicle dividers and filing cabinets they were kicking over, but it worked. Yeah.
When all you have is a cubicle, everything looks like knocking something over.
Let's see here. Moxie, how about you?
So mine is actually the original Stalker game.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the big thing here is that that's actually, I would argue, the only game I've ever played that had AI.
Okay.
In that, one of the core features of that, that it still blows my mind that no other game has even tried, is they don't do the whole, like, basically in every other shooter, the enemies are either standing around or doing a patrol route until you get close and they notice you, and that's the point at which their AI actually kicks in. Whereas in Stalker, they're always being directed by the AI. So, they could at any point, just like get into a fight with, some NPC and, end up on the other side of the map, or just, wander to a different position in the level, that sort of thing. Which completely changes up the gameplay. They actually originally had it, the other thing is they have a predator prey system where the different different monsters and human factions and stuff like that will fight each other and can actually depopulate, or I don't know what the opposite of depopulate is.
Repopulate?
Two
areas, or like certain enemies will actually migrate through different zones, things like that.
No.
Famously, in early versions of the game, it was apparently possible for NPCs to win the game instead of you.
They would get into the reactor.
Yep.
That's amazing.
So yeah, that's my another one I'd shout out is, and actually Stalker had some of this, is any game that has enemies that are smart enough to only go aggressive when they think they can win.
Okay.
So like in Stalker, the dogs, if it was just one dog, they would basically act like like a non-aggressive animal does in, say, like a Fallout game. However, if there's a pack of them, they would engage and attack you. similarly in Vermintide, the rats, if you ever like just happen to stumble upon one rat, they'll kind of push up against the wall and like try to edge hide, away and hide, which is very funny.
I'm invisible.
Ben.
Yeah, so I had two answers from this. I would say any Daniel Mullins game, if that counts as artificial intelligence.
It's
Daniel Mullins?
Pony Island and Inscription.
Oh,
and the Hex in between there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that isn't so much dynamic AI as it is a very good magic trick, a la Psycho Mantis.
It leans on the surprising part of the question.
Yes.
But if that doesn't count, then I'll go with Perfect Dark, mainly for being one of the first ones to have like a pretty robust AI system in the bots and the multiplayers.
And that does have enemies that can surrender if they think they can't win.
Does that ever work?
I forget, like, how do they surrender? I would always shoot the meat sim before it did anything.
I don't know about multiplayer and single player. If you disarmed enemies, they would surrender.
Okay.
Huh. Nice.
I want to say there was like a Rainbow Six game or something where you could choose to handcuff enemies. That's right.
That sounds like an early Rainbow Six thing before it became just kill everybody. Yeah.
Yep.
How about you, Dennis?
For me, it is the Shadow of Mordor series. Shadow of Mordor and
God,
Shadow.
That's a really good one.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And they kind of they traded on. Oh, go ahead.
Also, kind of just a really good magic trick, but I'll count it.
Yeah. Well, so the big thing they traded on was like this orc hierarchy and culture that would evolve. Culture is probably strong. Hierarchy that would evolve as you played. And certain orcs would take over each other's roles or develop different fears or confidences or grudges, all these things. So there's all this political maneuvering that's happening within their ranks. And you could infiltrate those ranks and have orcs kind of secretly working for you or carry out assassinations, or you could stoke a rivalry, etc. But the AI part that I thought was really cool is, you know, when you faced off against an orc, and particularly an orc that killed you, they would, one, get more powerful, but they would also remember how they killed you and comment on it and adjust their tactics accordingly. So if, you know, if you died by falling, they might be more likely to try to throw you off a cliff. Or, you know, if you died by fire, they might, you know, bring a bunch of burning stuff. Or, you know, if you leveraged a certain weakness to kill one orc's underling, their boss might learn from it and you know, change how their base is set up accordingly.
It's like a game-wide version of the Mr. Freeze boss fight from Arkham City.
Yes. Yeah. That's a great way to describe it. And so that was really cool, just because it felt like they were really learning and adjusting to what I did.
Yeah.
Good answer.
Man, those games are good. Also a game where they can surrender or run away if they don't feel like they can win.
Is what, yeah. I'm sorry?
I think it's another game where the enemies can surrender or run away.
Yeah. Did you ever beat Shadow of War?
No, not all the way.
Someone needs to beat that just so I can talk with them about how insanely off the rails that game goes.
It's the second one, correct?
No.
Yes.
I have it. I just have not played it.
Is that
the... Okay. It is one of my favorite games of all time, but the storyline is kind of good, but it goes really off the rails in entertaining
ways. Is that the
ways.
One where they make Shelob a sexy lady?
That's the second one.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Yes. All right.
And that is by far the least strange.
Nice. Well, good answers. Thanks everybody for participating. If you want to throw in on these, go to the Duckfeed community group on Facebook. Watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you for posting this, Dennis.
The
end boss. Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games and how we feel about them. Ben, what's happening in the world of video game movies?
Yeah, I was going to say my news story is basically a picture, but they dropped a new photo for the Borderlands movie. And by new, I think there's only one teaser photo made like 3 years ago that I think it was on Jamie Lee Curtis's Twitter. But it was just like an outline of Lilith. But this one is kind of like a more poster shot of like the main characters in the movie. So it does feature Kate Blanchett as Lilith. It features Kevin Hart and Jamie Lee Curtis as characters I don't recognize. And then
Tannis and unfortunately Roland.
All right. And then it has like Claptrap and then Tiny Tina and a psycho. So I guess the newsworthy thing of this is that this movie might actually come out this year, even though it was filmed a couple years ago. Huh. And I think it was first teased about like 9 years ago. So it's been in talks for forever. So I imagine since that there's a poster that's put out today, by the time this podcast comes out, there's probably going to be a trailer for it. But yeah, anyway, that if you're into Borderlands, that movie might be on the horizon.
Why did they not just have Ashley Birch play Tiny Tina?
Yeah, that's a fair
question.
No clue.
It feels like stunt casting. It feels like people are like, we got to get someone. But even then, I don't know the actress that's playing her. So
Kate Blanchett's a weird cast, I think, for this kind of movie. But
very
actress. Her and Jamie Lee Curtis, actually.
Does she have like a teenage nephew that she's trying to impress?
They are lucky to have her in any case. So
yeah,
yes. I just
Jamie Lee Curtis as Tannis, I think, is great. Mm. Like, I think that makes sense.
Yeah, it just I don't know. It's weird to see her slumming it, is the wrong word, but is actually what I mean. You know,
I feel like this was probably doomed the moment they got a voice actor for Claptrap, by which I mean the fact that Claptrap speaks probably will make this movie unwatchable.
And it's voiced by Jack Black as well, so that's...
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to do it...
Yeah, if there's one thing that could give me faith in this movie, It is that Jack Black is involved.
Oh, really?
He's been crushing it as of late. Oh, yeah.
See, that pushes
Did
me.
Did you see Mario?
No, I didn't. But that's like why. That's like pushes me in the opposite direction.
You got to go see the Mario movie and then come
back.
Yeah, talk to
I'm not going to lie. That is actually, I was going to ask, what is the one, like, can anyone name a scenario where this is a decent movie and Jack Black is actually a fairly decent, like, maybe there is hope.
I still don't think it's going to happen. I'm just saying the most positive thing.
On the other hand, I would probably watch a Tiny Tina's Wonderland movie.
Mm.
I just want to see a movie use the convention of this is somebody's tabletop role-playing game.
Yeah.
Which I guess is what Stranger Things does now. I stopped following it around season two, so.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's see here. Let's keep it to the world of post-apocalyptic shooters with role-playing elements. Moxie, what's happening with Magic?
Yeah, so this is ostensibly me presenting a news story, but it's really me hoping that Ben will explain to me what a news story means.
Sure.
apparently, Magic is doing a Universe Beyond, which is Fallout. However, it's not a real Fallout, or not a real Magic expansion. It is for commanders, and or commander decks or something, and collectible cards.
Yeah.
And apparently a bunch of the cards are actually just like re-releases of classic cards with Fallout art.
Yeah. Do you want me to chime in with
Yeah, so like what is a commander?
Ben, your thoughts.
Yeah. So commander is like a mode of Magic. I would say it's like a playing Magic that's most like D&D in the sense that like you get together with friends to do it. It takes like 4 to 6 hours, so you kind of make a evening out of it. But the difference is it's just like painful and brutal and kind of like Risk, where somebody can get knocked out really early and it's just like, I don't know, it can be a trudge depending upon what the commander decks are. But it's basically like decks that are like completely broken, and there's this weird like having to try and keep everybody in check sort of thing element going on, and things are like highly synergistic is maybe a way that you could explain commander. So all these commander decks that they're releasing are, some of them are existing mechanics, some of them appear to be new mechanics, but are ways that are things that are thematic to Fallout. So for example, there's like an energy deck, which is a mechanic that exists in Magic before. It's just kind of this neutral like resource energy that different cards can give you and different cards can spend. And so it's just like a new economy. They have one that's specific to this where they have rad counters that you can get on your Magic cards that I think work a similar way, where it's kind of its own economy. But namely, some of the cards that they're re-releasing in this set are Armageddon, which is Destroy All Lands, which is like a vintage card, and Soul Ring, which is another vintage card. And not only is it just another vintage card, but it's not technically, I can't remember if it's in the Power 9 or not, but it is as powerful as a Power 9 card, and better than some of the Power 9 cards. So those are kind of notable releases with it. The part that I'm confused at is some of these expansions will make their way into like modern and modern playable and Magic. So you'll see them if you play Arena, or like maybe they'll make them into cubes and stuff like that. Definitely the Lord of the Rings set did that. But for example, the Doctor Who set, I believe that's already released, but I haven't seen any of that in modern. So I'm not sure what kind of cuts through or not. So I'll be interested to see kind of what sticks with this set, if that kind of infiltrates its way into modern or not.
I don't know if this is that, but from reading some of the commentary, my understanding is that they're doing this like Elseworlds or whatever they call it thing. But like so far, the Middle Earth one has been the only one that's been a full set.
Yeah. Okay.
And apparently, like, this won't be a full set. Doctor Who was not. Apparently the Final Fantasy one next year is going to be a full set.
Okay.
And then after that, they're doing one based on Marvel.
Yeah. Which is like, it's curious why they do that. Cause it's like, It seems like it's just printing money if they release it as a set that people can play and that will integrate into the modern and stuff like that. Like, I think the Lord of the Rings one was, like, really, really successful in that sense. But whatever. I don't know. They'll figure out ways to make money. It's Wizards.
Do you think they playtest the ones that are not full sets a lot less? Like, it's their excuse to just have fun?
It could be, yeah. Because if you're just making a commander deck, you know, like, you're just making sure that it's synergistic within that set. And you don't need to worry about power curving that much just because it's, like, it's not going to be the most broken commander deck, I imagine. And the fact that, like, the cards aren't making their way into modern means that they don't have to care about the power balancing as much. So, yeah, they just need to make, like, an internally fun deck to play for commander. So
I do find it interesting that the mutant decks, like, premier card is apparently Mothman, so, like, it sounds like they're not just going to deny that Fallout 76 ever happened. And also one of the other decks is all about Caesar, which it feels like, did anyone like Caesar?
You mean from New Vegas?
Yeah. I like the idea of it.
it was underdeveloped. They literally, it was incomplete.
I like the concept of, was it crucifying people on telephone poles?
That was fun. Pretty stark.
We're learning many interesting things about Ben this episode.
Let's see. Speaking of New Vegas stuff, I have a very dumb story to share. So
it was the best type.
Fallout 3 and New Vegas have had very active modding communities for about as long as they have been out. Some of these mods are full conversions, very impressive things. Some of them are quality of life perks, and some of them are like the mod I'm going to talk about here. About 7 years ago, there was somebody by the name I think LB8068. Created a new companion mod for Fallout New Vegas that gave you as your companion in the Mojave Fred Durst from the band Limp Bizkit. And like a lot of goofy mods, it was put out there and people laughed at it or whatever. And like more mods, and as is more often the case than it should be, it became lost media. The mod creator lost the files in a hard drive format, and people thought, oh, well, this is just gone forever. Somebody named Usagi Kola and somebody named Mickey D, they worked together. Usagi Kola just had an archive of the files from this, and so the mod has been updated and put back out, and now you can have Fred Durst from Limp Bizkit follow you around. He's got the red hat, and hilariously, when he speaks, it's not like a, you know, an AI voice like mimicking him or whatever. It is like snippets of him singing in the songs. So,
oh, hell yes.
So if you ask him to adjust his tactics, it'll play like the snippet from My Way where he goes, my way, you're the highway. And when you finish the dialogue by saying, you know, okay, well, let's go. It goes, keep rolling, rolling, rolling. Just using like vaguely contextual, just like little snippets of the song as his mouth animates around the words. The video of it is very good if you go and search for it. Our shared culture has gotten that much richer by this not being dead as we imagined it to be.
What's your backstory? I came into this world as a reject.
Wait a minute. Where's the sniper and the Tyrannosaurus? It behind blue eyes. Oh God. The dumbest possible thing.
So dumb.
Yeah. Not dumb. In fact, matters greatly to a lot of people. Dennis, round us out with the final story here about a Baldur's Gate 3 patch.
Yeah, so Baldur's Gate 3, I think this is patch number 6, yes. Released just recently here. And, you know, were there some bug fixes? Yeah. Was there some you know, smoothing out of dialogue trees. Yeah, that happened. But the real important thing that they did is they added more kissing. And it was posited earlier in this show that Baldur's Gate 3 could potentially not just be about everybody fucking all the time. And so I'm going to submit this as Exhibit A. You have way more ways to kiss your partner.
Yeah.
Ranging from sweet to very, very steamy. And it is randomly rolled when you choose that option, which one you get.
Mm-hmm.
So a whole new set of ways to interact with your partner that you are romancing.
Yeah.
You know, it ranges from just a nice little peck on the head to Asterion getting very handsy, mm-hmm. we will say. I think you need to go stand in front of a fan after you watch that one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is Larian understanding the assignment, I would say. People want to live in this world, and
they're enhancing the part of Baldur's Gate that people actually care about.
Come now.
phrasing.
Anyway, they also added more camp interactions. Like, camp is a livelier mm-hmm. place now.
And something that's just a really big quality of life upgrade is now you don't have to dismiss a party member before bringing another in.
Yeah.
So before, if you tried to bring someone into your party, you would have to stop talking to the person you wanted to bring in,
mm-hmm.
go to the person you wanted to switch out from, and then go back. And that just was a lot of unnecessary walking around.
Yeah, it's a bummer. And even the kiss thing, it's nice to have more variety, and it's also nice for they improved the existing kisses as well, like just shot them better. It's a difficult thing to animate, right? It's hard to tell because since it came out, I have not, I'm not going and doing the same stuff. So like on my first playthrough, I romance Karlach. In my current one, romancing Shadowheart. Have no clue. What the fuck are you doing, Dottie? Sorry, Dottie's in the hallway just jumping up and scratching at the wall several times.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
It's Dottie's way or the highway.
Yeah. Sorry. So
clearly you have a body buried in the wall and you need to go excavate.
Yeah, it's a Silent Hill 4 situation. Regardless, I'm not doing like direct comparisons as to the way that it is improved, but video game kisses, always dorky. Anything they can do to maintain the illusion and the fiction here to build it up. Yeah.
Well, and just again, this trying to, let you inhabit the world and break the immersion as little as possible. And knowing that you're playing this, like probably getting emotionally invested in your character and the characters that they care about. This makes a lot of sense and is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Larian continuing to do it right.
Yeah. And being rewarded for doing right, which is also an important part of this.
Yes, 100%.
I'm trying to get a video of Dottie doing the thing. Sorry, I'm very distracted by what she's looking at. There we go. What you doing,
she
babe?
She knows we're getting towards the end here.
Yeah. Okay. I'll upload a video of this. Regardless, sorry about being distracted there. It does mean we are drawing to the end. Any final thoughts about the Baldur's Gate 3 patch?
No, it does create a weird world, though. I started very early in Baldur's Gate 3's life and then kind of got to Act 3 and got distracted with other stuff and will be coming back to Baldur's Gate 3 when I finish it on the other side of a ton of patches.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm kind of wondering, I'm splitting this game over several patches. Is that going to break stuff? Is that going to get weird? I don't know.
No, probably not.
So,
I mean, just like real life, early in my life, I was horrible at kissing, and now much better.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly.
How do y'all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
The credit.
Thank you so much for listening to level number 491. Gonna remind you, if you are in the area or would like to travel, Gary and I are going to be at the Midwest Gaming Classic in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, as opposed to the other Milwaukees that are out there. April the 6th and 7th, we have a panel. We're going to be at a table. We'll have more details about a meetup. It'll be good fun. Meanwhile, for this show, if you would like to help us, you listen to podcasts, you know what to do. you can leave a rating or review. You can tell your friends. You can back us on Patreon. You can tell me what the fuck this cat is doing. Sorry, I'm normally really good at ignoring their antics, but I need to check and see what's up there.
Yeah, really.
Literally climbing up the walls.
Yeah. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
Don't think so.
Dennis, play anything to promote? Nope.
They play Fallout New Vegas with the Fred Durst patch.
Yep.
That goes without saying.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can follow me on Blue Sky at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can follow me on Blue Sky at Furia Games and on Twitch at GreenLaser73.
I'm Moxie. Just Moxie.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. I only have one. It's you don't restart. Okay. Go ahead.
I have Pandora's Bach.
Actually,
I have that as well.
Actually, a beer by Breckenridge.
I know. I looked
yeah,
it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that all you had?
That was it.
All right, Moxie. Anything else besides Pandora's Bach?
I also have, they've got lasers for that.
Okay. Ben, what you got?
I got nothing.
Okay. I like they've got lasers for that.
Yeah, that's good.
All right. I don't want to promote that beer. I haven't had it, so it's hard to tell.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
All right. Well, yeah, no, it is decided.